this political coliseum, we slay the rising beast with the fateful sword of truth that transcends hypocrisy and censorship. It's time to unleash yourself from the tyrants of media propaganda on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. This is Unleashed, the Political News Hour.
The Great American Divide, what's it all about? Is it actually a battle between good and evil, like a lot of people are saying? Or are we just kind of experiencing just a whole bunch of politics, maybe a little more tense, but, you know, politics as usual? Or, as some people claim, is this a religious war of some type? And whatever it is that's going on in America right now, this great divide, is it worth fighting for? It seems to me very obvious that a lot has changed in America over, oh, say, the past decade, maybe longer, but in the last few years, especially since we experienced the whole COVID pandemic, things really rapidly changed in America. And I can't really say that anything has normalized. Now, a few people might argue this point. They say, no, you know, it's not anything big. It's just kind of an election year. It's what we experience in America in every election period. And so some people might not make too much of it. A lot of people just seem to carry on with their life. But for the most part, where we really differ, if we differ, is in our perception to the change, whether it's good or whether it's bad or helpful or harmful. Now, many Americans across every sector of society seem to believe that America is headed for disaster. I would think that's the majority. And a lot of people feel that something bad is going to happen, and they think it's going to happen soon. Some people are calling that the black swan event, the Big Bang. But the question is this foreboding of a pending tragedy, is it justified? Well, I seem to think it is. But what's worse, and what's really causing a problem in America right now, is that America really does seem to be divided in a way that we've never really experienced before, maybe, you know, back in the Civil War. But we are facing these critical issues, and everybody seems to have an opinion on these issues. And the sad thing for us as a nation is that we cannot seem to agree on anything. And worse than that, we can't seem to have a discussion about anything without people being offended or accusing the other of being crazy one way or the other, or evil. And, you know, not everybody can be right. So it's a real problem. And we know that a house divided cannot stand. That is just a principle of life. So if we cannot heal the great schism that divides America right now, then it seems to me that the collapse of America, of this great nation, just seems inevitable. And that really disturbs me. Most people, I suspect, would actually like to bridge the chasm. I mean, I don't like fighting. I don't like being at odds with my neighbor, with family members who think differently. And that's happening a lot right now among many, many people in the country. They have lost friends. They have lost relationships with family members simply because they don't agree. They don't think alike on what is happening in our country. They are for one president against the other, for this politician against that. They are for the whatever moral issues that they favor, and they reject others. And we all tend to pick and choose. It's our humanity. We all have biases. We all have different grievances with different people. But the question is, if we are going to unify America, and unity is a good thing, how exactly are we going to get there? How in the world can we possibly unite? You're listening to Unleash the Political News Hour. Dr. Steve Latulla posting here, and I'm going to be bringing on a guest who has more than a little to say about how we might actually unite this great divide among the American people. His name is Seth David Radwell. Goes by Seth Radwell. He is an America Out Loud writer, and that's how I was introduced to Seth. He recently wrote a three-part series of articles dealing with the topic American Schism in 2024. Mr. Radwell also has written a book titled American Schism. It declared him actually a winner of the 2022 International Book Awards. And one endorser of the book called it, quote, a bracing call to nonviolent arms. That sounds appealing to me. Anna Navarro, a CNN contributor, praised his book, saying, quote, it conveys the history of our core values and shows us a reasoned way forward. So Seth is an entrepreneur. He's a business executive, and he is a recognized thought leader in consumer marketing. So Seth does have something to say. What really got my curiosity, though, about Seth is the subtitle of his book, and that is How the Two Enlightenments Hold the Secret to Healing Our Nation. Now, healing our nation should be, hopefully, a top priority for all Americans, right? Seth claims he has the answer, and so I want to pick his brain a little today and put it to the test. I certainly want to save America, and I'll listen to anyone who says he knows how we can do it. But I've got to confess to you, I'm a little bit of a skeptic, and I'll admit that right up front. I mean, we look back and we hear things like, Mike Pence said he would support Donald Trump, and a lot of people say he betrayed him at Donald Trump's critical moment when he really needed the vice president to come through. We look at Speaker Mike Johnson. He said he would unite House Republicans and he would bring good things to America by way of a united majority in the House. Now, so far, a lot of people are saying he has failed miserably in his promise. He has somehow changed. Some people even say he is compromised somehow. Maybe he's bribed or blackmailed. I don't know. We don't have all the facts. But here's what we do have. Right now, we have an election before us that most Americans believe is going to be flawed or rigged somehow. So if there's anyone out there who feels he has the answers to uniting Americans, I am all ears. I want to hear it. But I'm also a scientist. I'm a physician, a retired Air Force officer. I flew heavies. I flew fighters. And I served part of my military time as chief of medicine with the Oregon Air National Guard. And I'm a serious student of the Bible. So I put that all together. And for that reason, I always tell myself I need some facts. I need something I can grab onto, a strong handle, so that I know I'm pursuing truth. I need to know the mission, all right? That is critical in any military function. We need to know what the mission is. We need to know what the rules of engagement are. And lastly, I am forever on a quest for truth. That is very, very important. And truth seems to be elusive today for a number of reasons. And for example, when a Biden Jr. campaign spokesman named Michael Tyler criticizes Trump's campaign fundraising, speaking to Al Sharpton on MSNBC, this was, I think, on April 7th, he says, quote, the whole lot of them is a bunch of billionaire scammers, extremists, and racists. Well, I immediately go into that analytical mode. On what basis does he say that? And then I ask, well, what's his motives? And then I ask, finally, is it true what Michael Tyler says? Is his criticism justified? Because, you know, maybe it is, and maybe it's not. Well, we have to just kind of figure that out ourselves. But how do we do it? Because that's how we can come together, how we reason together. And reasoning is good if it is based on substance, on fact, and on the truth of the matter. But getting at the truth, that's the hard part. I'm going to take a short pause, and then I'm going to bring on my guest and author of American Schism, Seth Radwell, to help me figure this out.
You already know Genesis plus HOCL is your best defense against viruses. But did you also know it's the most powerful weapon for eliminating airborne mold too? Customers are raving about the Genesis Fogger's ability to tackle mold problems and the bad smells that go with them. And we all know mold is a hazard to your health. There's no airborne invader that Genesis can't handle. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Whoa, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
And welcome back to Unleash the Political News Hour. Dr. Steve LaTulip here hosting this show that airs each weekday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I would encourage you, please go to americaoutloud.news. We've got some great radio shows at that website, some podcasts, and awesome articles from authors who are not censored, who aren't afraid to speak the truth boldly, even when the truth hurts. I would like to welcome to the show today, Seth Radwell. Seth, thank you so much for joining me today. I really look forward to hearing the application of the Enlightenment principles that you claim hold the secret to healing our nation. So, Seth, let me just ask you, with regard to Michael Tyler's comments to Al Sharpton on MSNBC about Donald Trump's campaign fundraising strategy, remember, just for the listeners, he said the whole lot of them is a bunch of billionaire scammers, extremists, and racists. And now Joe Biden was doing a New York fundraiser in late March with Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, and lots of high-profile celebs. Each ticket actually cost $500,000 to attend. And for another $100,000, you could get a photo taken with Biden, Obama, and Clinton. Trump also was in New York at that time. He was attending the wake of slain New York Police Department officer Jonathan Diller. So in my analytical mindset, I'm asking, on what basis does Michael Tyler make his accusations against Donald Trump? And what are his motives? And are they true? What's your opinion on that, Seth?
Well, first of all, Steve, thank you so much for having me. I heard what you were talking about in the opening, and I hope we can get back to that, because I do believe America is tremendously worth saving, and I'm extremely worried about it. So we'll come back to that. Regarding your question, it sounds like the comment that was made on MSNBC was not only was it not true, it was being provocatively destructive. And that's so much of my concern today around some of the media channels, is that as opposed to trying to get to the truth, which is what you talked about a couple of minutes ago, it's really the comments and the perspective is trying to enrage or stimulate the audience in a way that's not helpful. Now, by the way, in the book, I call that it's stimulating our amygdala-driven brains, trying to get us worked up. And that, to me, is one of the key problems in our civic debate today.
Okay, Seth, wait a minute. Let me stop you right there. I don't think there's too many listeners that know what the amygdala is. Could you put it in English for the listeners?
Sure. Well, this is great because I know you're a doctor. So that, I kind of threw that in, Steve. I thought you might appreciate it. So human beings we're incredible species, and we've evolved over millions of years. And for most of those millions of years in our history, what saved us was this fight or flight response in our brain. Like when we're afraid, we react from in an emotional way, or when we're proud, there are certain emotions that kind of take over our brain to help us survive. And in history, it's been very helpful. And so what I mean by that is that a lot of the political debate that you hear today is different politicians, and I think on both sides, I think they're both equally guilty of this. They're trying to push buttons of getting you angry or scared or immobilized, because I think what the electoral industry has found is that the way to mobilize voters is to push those buttons. But unfortunately, that's not the way to solve problems.
Well, I would agree that I would totally agree with that, Seth, because, we have that problem of causing a lot of hype. We've had a lot of fear mongering and which side has the more fear mongering? Well, that's a matter of opinion. But, Seth, you recently wrote a series of three articles on American Schism in 2024. Now, that title really grabbed me. The second article drew a little criticism because of a couple of comments you made. But just for clarification, Seth, where do you place yourself on this political spectrum between radical left and radical right? And I realize it's a wide spectrum.
Well, I place myself right in the square center. And, what drove me to leave my career in business, you mentioned, Steve, that I was very, very well known for marketing. I left my career in business because I was so concerned that the pragmatic center was getting crowded out by the extremes on both sides. So if I had to describe myself politically, I've always been very much a centrist. Now,
Yeah, I would have actually guessed that, Seth. Just, from hearing you, I think, some people might accuse you or centrist of being kind of a fence straddler. You're not committed either way. But I hear your point, and I think it's a valid one. How do we come together? How do we pull together? Well, and something else that grabbed me in a good way was a comment that was made. I believe you made it on your second article. And you say, many who get lost in the sea of digital information have simply abandoned the pursuit of truth altogether. Now, I totally agree with that statement, Seth. I'm not sure why people have abandoned the truth, but maybe it's due to information overload. Maybe it's normalcy bias. They just don't want to deal with it because it's just so overwhelming. Or maybe people are just caught up in the daily grind. But if pursuing truth is so important, I think it's very essential that we define it. What is truth? Right. I mean, Pontius Pilate asked that question to Jesus in response to his words. This is in the Gospel of John. He says, are you a king then? And Jesus answered, and his words were key here. He says, you say rightly that I am a king. For this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. Now, would you agree with that statement, or have we another source of enlightenment to show us the truth? In other words, how do we define what is truth, just like Pontius Pilate said?
Well, so it's a terrific area to talk to discuss. I think truth and the pursuit of truth is fundamental to us as a species and to saving America. Now, when I talk about truth, I'm talking about truth in the way the Enlightenment in the 18th century thought about it, which is that truth in a scientific perspective, you being a doctor, I know you spent a lot of your career in that area. And in this case, the model of truth, or think of it as a constitution of knowledge that we build, is always provisional. Meaning, you know, something is true. If I hold up a glass of water and I say to you, this is water, and you say, no, it's not, after I show you that it's hydrogen and oxygen bound together, which is water, that you should be able to say, oh, right, you're right, it was water, and be convinced. So the idea of truth is that it stands up to rigor. It's not been proven false. And that's why I say this provisional.
Yeah, let me ask you this then. Is, you know, you're talking about an Enlightenment model of truth. You say it is always provisional. Now, I want to just clarify, what do you mean by that? Are you saying that there are no absolutes in this world?
I'm saying that truth in a scientific sense is provisional, in that once there's evidence that it's not true and it's proven not true based on peer review and transparency, then a different hypothesis becomes the truth, so to speak. But for the purposes of public policy or in the public domain, I think truth becomes a quest. And I do think that the way the information age is today, the way social media is, and often cable media too, I think most consumers have given up the quest for truth because it seems impossible to find.
Okay.
And that's concerning.
Yeah, it is concerning. But I want to really get at this, because when you're talking about Enlightenment, the Enlightenment model of truth versus, you know, even the words of Jesus in the Bible, he says, everyone who is of the truth hears my voice, and that he came to bear witness to the truth. It sounds like he's talking about an absolute truth. And what I hear, and what I've read about the Enlightenment is, if you will, we get at the truth by seeking out our world. And in a sense, we conclude that all the wonders that we seek, all the wonderful discoveries of the Enlightenment, are inherently within us. Whereas from a biblical perspective, all the wonders we seek are from God, because we were created in God's image with his creativity, with a brain that surpasses all other living creatures. So in a sense, and tell me what you think about this, is your Enlightenment theory a religion in itself?
No, see, this is often, in my view, a common misconception. I think many of the people that we call the Enlighteners, the people who wrote during the Enlightenment, were men, mostly men. There were some women, but men of faith. And what their model evolved to be was one where they recognized that the mysteries of the faith-based world, of God and what our mission is on earth and why he put us here, that realm, if you will, for the Enlightenment thinkers, was separate from the empirical realm of solving problems in the world. And I think one of the gifts of the Enlightenment was allowing for those two worlds to be separate spheres of influence. It's why Thomas Jefferson wrote famously that in this new country that we're creating, we have a right, a freedom not only of religion, but from religion. So, you know, the idea was that we're not questioning men's or women's faith in God or their belief system. And I personally, you know, I'm a faith-based person. I believe in God. But when I talk about the Enlightenment model, I'm explicitly letting everyone have their faith, belief in faith. And I'm talking about what in the pragmatic scientific world can we agree to. So if you look at the...
Okay. All right. So I like that. I like that. Let's go there, Seth. I want to put your theory here to a test. Okay. So yep. in your second article, and this was one of the things that a few people took exception with on your opinion, you stated climate change is threatening the planet's existence. Okay. So you stated that as a fact. and you didn't cite any supporting evidence. Now, when I read that, I read your entire article, I thought, well, isn't that a form of what you actually call lay postmodernism, which is a belief that everyone is entitled to their own truth or facts? So, how would you defend that statement that climate change is threatening the planet's existence based on the Enlightenment model of truth?
Well, okay. So first of all, you're completely right that in that article I talked about this notion of lay postmodernism, meaning everyone's entitled to their own reality. If you survey the scientists who've looked at this, I think they've shown beyond a reasonable doubt that there is climate change going on. We could argue about, I guess, the point that you're making reference to, whether it's threatening the planet's existence could be debatable. But I've certainly read many points of view on this from the scientific community that maintain that climate change, whatever its cause may be, that it is, in fact, threatening the planet.
So you're referencing expert opinion. Yes. Have you ever heard of the evidence pyramid, the hierarchy of scientific evidence?
Yes.
Okay, so if you look at that pyramid, you know, you go from the highest evidence, the strongest evidence, which is meta-analyses, systematic reviews. Then you go to randomized controlled trials, cohort studies, all the way down. And last of all are the case reports and expert opinions. So when you're saying expert opinion, there's a problem with that if you're citing that as a source, because number one, it is the weakest evidence. But number two, it's highly one-sided, because I know a lot of scientists who have a lot to say about climate change and what I would call climate hysteria. But given that all those who oppose the climate hysteria, they are brutally shunned and censored so that the public doesn't hear their side. And truthfully, and I know this from a personal fact, that the best climate scientists are denied publication of their powerful data and findings in science journals because it doesn't fit the political narrative. So the public, that depends on opinions of scientists, they don't ever even hear the other side. Now, isn't that a problem? Because you're formulating your beliefs and making a statement of fact like climate change is threatening the planet's existence, but it's all based on someone's opinions, but a one-sided opinion. If that's all you ever hear, obviously you're going to believe that. Am I off in my thinking here?
Well, I think you're correct in that the whole premise of the constitution of knowledge, of the truth base that we build together, is that it's transparent. So the idea that specific scientists, because their analytical data or their empirical data don't fit some political model, if they're being censored, that's the worst enemy of the pursuit of truth.
So it is. Are you aware of the mutiny of medicine, of science right now? I mean, I tried to publish a paper. You talked about the amygdala. Now people have no idea that is a region of the brain that comprises part of the limbic system, which is kind of, among other things, the emotional center of the brain. Okay, so I in medicine, I actually practice central pain, which doctors themselves, medical doctors, know nearly nothing, next to nothing about. And I wanted to publish a paper describing the mechanism of central pain, which causes fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, complex regional pain syndrome, and those sort of things. So yes. Here I've got all this data, 20 years of case reports, if you will, and I want to publish a paper, something like a case study, which is on the lower end of the spectrum of evidence, but it's where you start sometimes. Yes. And they would not allow me to publish it. They have changed the rules. They shun any opposing view. So it's a problem with getting at truth. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. That's certainly the quest for knowledge has to be transparent and open. You know, one of the beauties, I mentioned this in the book, American Schism. The way I like to think about a constitution of knowledge, it's like a big funnel. So what do I mean by that? It's on one end, it's really wide. It has a really wide opening, meaning anyone, you don't have to be an expert. People can toss ideas and theories in the funnel, But the funnel does get narrower as it moves down and it's transparent. So these different ideas that go in the funnel are reviewed by peers and people who study it. And then what comes out the other side after peer review and transparency is in fact provisional truth. And that's the way we should look at it. So the fact that if you're saying certain points of view are not being allowed to be published because they don't fit a political statement, I mean, that's certainly very, very troublesome. In my last piece, which I call The Tyranny of the Woke on America Out Loud News, I talk about how on campuses, in colleges, in many parts of the country, there's become a left-driven political narrative that professors who don't agree with are not accepted, and they're often canceled. And
right.
That's very dangerous.
Yes, it is. Now, you've mentioned multiple times peer review. Now, you realize that all of the major medical journals right now, The Lancet, New England Journal of Medicine, you know, name your big medical journal. I mean, they are peer reviewed journals, and every single one of them is fully, completely endorsing the COVID shot, fully and thoroughly endorsing and promoting gender-affirming care, which is absolute mutilation of children. So, you know, when you talk about peer review, I'm skeptical. I think, wait a minute here, because I'm in the minority, Seth. I mean, they took my medical license away. First doc in America to have my license law suspended because I treated COVID patients early with 100% success. And I told the world that publicly just before they came out with the so-called messenger RNA shot program under emergency use authorization. Okay, right. So great big discrepancy in seeking truth there, because I said the truth is this novel coronavirus is actually very treatable. 100% of my patients got better. None went to the emergency department, none hospitalized, none died, even with comorbidities, young to old. So there you have it. Well, let me switch gears a little bit. We've been talking about science, Seth, but I want to get another point. Now, I believe that we both agree on the border crisis thing, because you actually said we have an untenable border crisis. And I agree with that. We look at illegal immigrants, they're pouring into our country, thousands daily from at least 163 countries, according to the Border Patrol Chief Jason Owens. So many of them are coming from enemy countries, right? And they're allowed to purchase, own, and carry weapons, although we have the red flag laws constricting people like who may have attended the January 6th protests. But many are coming in, they're harboring communicable diseases, parasites, they're getting all kinds of free benefits, food, housing, medical care, cell phones, you know, a monthly allowance, all at the taxpayer's expense. And so taxes continue to rise. And at the same time, the cost of purchasing life essentials continues to soar. So, Seth, let me just ask you, who is responsible for the border crisis?
The border crisis is one that is very severe. I agree with you on that. And it's been the responsibility of in the last 30 years, Steve, both administrations, the Democrats and the Republicans, have failed to put in place a manageable border and immigration policy. And in fact, what's ironic about this particular issue is it's extremely complex. There are many aspects to it, and it requires a comprehensive program. And every time we've had a comprehensive bipartisan program on the table, for some reason or another, it hasn't passed.
And wait, so Seth, wait a minute. Let me stop you right there. The Biden administration, just a straightforward answer here. Do they want border security, do you think?
Yes, I do. I do think.
Okay, so then why in Biden's first day of office, why did he stop deportations? Why did he reinstate catch and release? Why did he limit illegals from being arrested? He stopped border wall construction. He ended Trump's successful Remain in Mexico policy. If he wants border security, why did he do all of that on the very first day? And why has he sued the states like Texas every time they want to protect their border? He is opposing it. And why is every dollar that is supposedly going to border security All it does instead is they are processing people to come in. They're flying them in. All the money is going to getting all these illegal immigrants coming into the country. I don't see $1 being spent on actual border security. Am I missing something?
Yeah, I think there, you know, there's definitely money being spent on border security. I think your point about some of what Biden changed was regrettable, but I think that the border security problem is needs a combination of things, and better border patrol and better border security is certainly one of them. But we also need a much better process for processing asylum seekers and just people who come to the border in the first place. We need a much more people in the justice system processing that, and I agree with you. We need people who deported who are not here legally. Legal immigration is a very important thing for our country. It always has been, and I think if you talk to the business community, which I'm a member of, I think there is a desire for certain skills in this country that we need. And so the need for correct legal immigration is great. And so when I say a bipartisan or a comprehensive solution, what I mean is fixing the processing problems with the current immigration system, getting a plan on how we want to decide what immigrants we want and don't want, and what our asylum policy should be, and then enforcing it. And enforcing
Seth, but what about just enforcing the law that we already have? These people are coming in illegally, right? They're not coming in through entry points, through the legal process. They are coming in illegally. And so what is this comprehensive bipartisan immigration bill going to do to strengthen border security? Because you actually, in your second article, I mean, you accused Donald Trump of provoking hysteria, right? And inducing his minions, as you call them, to veto the so-called bipartisan immigration bill. So
I see a great disconnect. Senator Omar from Oklahoma, a Republican, led the charge on drafting a bill that was just in Congress less than about a month ago. And this was what I called a bipartisan bill because it was drafted by both sides. Republicans, many Republicans conceded that the Democrats gave a lot of room. It was much more closer, let's say, to some of the solution space that Republicans have been putting forth for quite a while. The Democrats wanted a compromise on this, and they agreed to it. And it is also true that Donald Trump told the Republican Party to not support it. Now,
was there any reason for that, though?
I'm not sure why he did that. I mean, that's cynical people would say that he wanted to make sure the issue didn't get solved before he can run on it, because he has certainly used immigration as, in my view, an important campaign issue. So I think that's one view. Maybe he didn't.
Well, it's a major campaign issue, Seth, and I think you'd agree with that.
Yes,
but the conflict I'm having here is that we're talking about a bipartisan immigration bill from a uniparty where you've got so many compromised Republicans. I question that we can have anything bipartisan, because what I see is an administration that is cutting razor wire to allow illegals to come in illegally. They're suing Texas for the Rio Grande River barrier, right? They made the wall more porous than Swiss cheese. And they are now even flying illegals directly into our cities from other countries like Panama. And in fact, they're housing them there at a former American military base. And I've actually been to that base, and let me tell you, it's completely trashed. But I don't see a single dollar that has been spent by this administration to actually stop illegals. I don't see where they want to stop illegals. I think they're doing all they can to bring them in. And I'm just looking at the evidence.
I've looked at some of the evidence, and I don't agree with that. I think that some of the evidence that you're pointing to is correct. But they've also actually hired more, in some cases, more border officers. They've tried to increase the processing of asylum cases. There's still a huge backlog. I mean, and another thing the administration has pursued, by the way, is they've tried to encourage governments in Central America, which is where a lot of this problem is coming from. They've been giving having discussions and giving incentives to governments in Central America to stop people from leaving in the first place. So we could argue and debate whether their program is effective.
Let's look at the data. Let's just compare the Biden administration versus the Trump administration, which had the more secure border. Yeah, I mean, is that not obvious, or am I totally just kind of
I think your point is well taken there. I think Biden probably didn't emphasize border security enough. I agree with you. And I think in the Trump administration, it was stronger. But actually, the person who deported the most illegal immigrants was Obama. Obama was sometimes called the deporter in chief. If you look at the numbers, the deportations during his two terms were higher than both Trump's and Biden's.
Well, I'm not privy to that information, Seth. You're going to send me on a search for that, because,
take a look at it.
I just don't know. All the data on that. So I'll take you at your word and I'll investigate that. But I do see an absolute contrast between Trump's border security and Biden's border invasion.
Right. There's no possibility that we can let border security be lax so that we feel like we're being invaded. That is horrific policy. And I think I agree with you that the Biden administration has not been effective at handling that. And
are we being invaded, would you say?
I think that the border crisis is unmanageable. Whether you call it invasion or not, I mean, that's a loaded term. But we cannot manage the number of people.
Why is that a loaded term?
Because we're not being invaded by people with bombs and nuclear weapons. We're being invaded by citizens who often are fleeing some other country. And
but how many countries are releasing all their criminals? They're emptying all their psych wards. They're getting rid of, the dregs of their societies. They're showing up at our border. Now, how do they even get there unless somebody's funding that? Right. And that's what's coming into our country. And a lot of them are single men. We've seen that, military aged men, physically fit. And, when you start looking at the pieces of the puzzle, it's concerning, Seth, because we know that our government, for example, has been stockpiling weapons and ammunition for years. For what purpose? How many government agencies are armed right now, including the IRS, right? What is their plan? It causes people concern. And to not say that our country is being invaded right now, when you look at the logistics, you look at the population changes, you look at this dreadful increase in crimes by these illegals, I would say, how do you not call that?
But Steve, did you understand why this bipartisan bill did not get funded? What was your opinion on it? Because it was certainly
it was pure crap, Seth. Tell me one good thing that came from that. They're sending money to Ukraine, a proxy war, and of course that's another total different discussion, right? But a proxy war, they're not going to fund border security. They're going to fund the continued processing of illegals coming in through illegal channels in our country. And that's what's actually it's transpiring right now. It is a huge concern because of the millions coming, Seth. We got 2 minutes. Okay. I want to give that to you. Just give me your last word on the border wall. And then, but first I got to ask you, who's going to be president in 2024?
Unclear at this point. Looks like Trump's ahead of Biden. So we'll see how it plays out. I think, I think that what's so interesting to me is there are so many, the majority of Americans didn't want either candidate to run. And that's become clear.
Okay, so the border. Go ahead. Give me
We need a comprehensive solution that deals with increasing border security, but also fixing the process of how to sort out what are legal immigrants from illegal ones. And now the ones who are illegal need to go through. If they don't qualify for asylum, they need to be deported. Now, doing all of that requires a comprehensive set of changes because we're currently not doing it. And so I think we both agree that it's not working today. I argue that the bill that just got rejected would have brought us much closer to a more manageable system.
How? Can you name one thing?
Yes, it had many more dollars for border security police.
Okay.
That's one.
Okay.
It had a big increase also in processing costs and clearing out the backlog in courts for asylum, because that's one of the problems is being able to process those asylum seekers so we can make a decision and either throw them out or grant them asylum. So it had more money for judges to do that program. Those are two. It also, by the way, did have money for border wall, for actual physical border wall. All three of those were in this bill.
Okay, well, I cannot conceptualize Biden building a border wall. I just can't do it based on all the evidence of what we see going on right now. But Seth, I greatly appreciate all of your comments, and I am grateful that you're here to join me today. Seth Radwell, he is the author of American Schism, How the Two Enlightenments Hold the Secret to Healing Our Nation. Please read Seth's articles on AmericaOutloud.news. Also, you will get some alternative views from Seth. And as Seth says, it's always good to hear varied opinions. I respect Seth. And Seth, I thank you very much for joining our listeners today. I greatly appreciate your time and your insights. We're going to take a short pause and I'll return.
When God, through his grace and mercy, gave us free will, the will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutloud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Lifestyle changes are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created Heart and Vascular Health to support cholesterol and blood pressure with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop. That's AmericaOutloud.shop. And use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
And welcome back. You're listening to Unleashed, the Political News Hour. You are here to hopefully hear the truth, root out the truth, and use it for some good. I would encourage you, please, if you would, go to AmericaOutloud.shop for some great innovations in health and nutrition. We do appreciate our sponsors a whole lot, and we do have products that can improve your well-being. Give them a try and see for yourself, and use the code OUTLOUD and get a significant discount. And please don't forget, go to AmericaOutloud.news. Keep abreast of all that's happening in the world. And get a healthy perspective on the critical issues before us in this critical time of American history, and please become an active part of that history. So we have been discussing a lot of different things about America. You know, America is hurting. I would say we don't just have a border crisis. We have a national crisis, a problem with a divide in America that makes the continental divide look like a little anthill. And the question is, what will it take to heal America? Lots of people have lots of ideas, and lots of people have no ideas at all. Some people believe that a neo-Renaissance mindset will cure all of our woes. And all, you know, the question I have is, are all the wonders we seek within ourselves? Do we have it within us to fix all the problems? Or are we rather a reflection of the creativity that God bestowed on us by forming us from the dust in his own image, as the Bible says? Now, the Christian worldview says that America is not a byproduct of enlightenment, but of being a nation under God who shed his grace on us. Now, those words actually come from the Pledge of Allegiance, one nation under God, and from the America song, My Country, 'Tis of Thee, God Shed His Grace on Thee, right? We used to take that pledge solemnly, and we used to sing that song with equal pride and honor. And some of us still do. But let's face it, you have to decide about what path we must take to save America. We somehow have to come up with a solution to bring America together. Now, I wrote a book called Unity Without Compromise, and I believe that unity is essential. As I said, a house divided cannot stand. That also comes from the Bible, by the way, and it is just a proven fact. We cannot maintain a country if we don't have something to root us, something to give us a standard. And as I said, unity without compromise. Well, how can we even begin to talk about compromise if we have no standard? So that's the crux of the matter, in my opinion. If we have no standard whatsoever, then the only thing we're left with is being subject to the whim of man. We will appeal to expert opinions that we hear, and we will often fail to hear other expert opinions. We all have the same data before us in the world. We have the same evidence. The problem comes from how we interpret the evidence. And that is a real problem. But if we don't remember our roots, in my opinion, then there's no way we're going to be able to save America. And we all have to choose. And then we all are going to have to live with the consequences of our choices. If we forget, or if we misunderstand that what really made America the greatest nation on earth, if we don't know how we got there, how we became initially a great nation, then how are we ever going to get it back? Like, you know, Donald Trump is saying, make America great again. Well, it sounds great, and I think everybody wants it. I know Seth Radwell wants it. I want it. And I think we're doing what we can to try to raise the issues that are going to bring us together and make our nation stronger. But from my perspective, with what I see happening right now, if we forget our roots, our Christian roots, then I think Obama is surely going to have his fundamental transformation, as he called it, of America. And it will be a transformation from a free republic to a slave state. So I would propose, for starters, that we don't aid and abet this enemy. And that's what I see our government doing right now, our federal government in particular, and many of the blue states. And we have to have unity without compromise to save America, but compromise has to be defined by some sort of standard. And for me, very clearly, and I want to state it with all the umph I've got, That standard is the Bible. If you read about the history of America, you eventually have to read Alexis de Tocqueville. He was a French historian, came to study America in the early 1800s because he wanted to find out what was the strength of America. And you know what he says? He said, I couldn't understand it until I went there and I found it in the churches, in the Christian churches, in the Bible. So this is what we have to choose. We have to decide what is going to be our standard, because otherwise, as Seth said, you know, truth is arbitrary. Well, it's your truth versus my truth. And I think it's a great point that Seth is making when he talks about this lay postmodernism thinking. It's just a fancy word for saying, look, I'll define my own truth, and I don't want to debate it. I don't want to discuss it. I will believe what I will believe. Now, we all have human biases because we are human beings. Biases are flaws in interpreting the truth or in getting at the truth. And so if we're going to all have biases, you know, I personally would rather choose to have the biases of God, because if we don't do that, then I have to choose between another man's biases, another expert opinion, and another assessment of what's really going on. I mean, is the border wall package, is it a good bill or is it a bad bill? Well, we obviously have differences of opinion on that. To date, I have not seen the Biden administration do a thing to strengthen our border. So who's right or wrong? Are you? Do you have to be a radical right or a radical left? Or can we just be a radical American and say we love our country? Because radical just means getting at the root of things. That's what the word means. It doesn't mean that you're a rebel without a cause to be radical, although you could be. So we've got to base things on facts. We have to look at the evidence and rightly divide the truth. Now, I appeal again to the Bible because, as Jesus himself said when Pontius Pilate asked him, what is truth? Jesus said, I'm the truth. In fact, in the Gospel of John, Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and nobody comes to me or nobody comes to the Father except through me. Now, that makes me think about, what does the standard say? And biblical illiteracy in America is overwhelming right now. I mean, ask any Christian, how many books are in the Bible? Have you read them all? And, you know, they're clueless. And the younger generation especially. There's been a great falling away, but there is also a great revival going on. So what I'm asking you to do today is you think about these issues as you see all of the headlines every day with some new crisis, some new reason to wake up and be afraid, is I would suggest have some peace and cling to a standard that has been for a long time. That standard is what gave us the Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights. It inspired those great man-made documents. And I love them and I cherish them. As a military officer, I took an oath to defend the Constitution, not defend a president, and especially a rogue one. So there you have it. That's my story. And we must choose a standard and choose wisely. And then we have to live it, because we are going to reap what we sow. And for that reason, I will ask you, I will beg you, please, let's unleash the truth.